Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the National Football League for BleacherReport.com, Scout.com, Sports on Earth, and now TheSportsDaily.com. I'm one busy lady. Anyway, I'm joined this week, like always, by my co-host, Brian.
You.
How's it going, Brian?
Oh, it's going fantastic. I've been seeing, you know, footballs being thrown around all week on the TV. And,
9 hours of nonstop training camp coverage on the NFL Network. That's what I watch every day.
And I just like how, like, each hour it's like a new hour of the same thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
On the guide, you look at the guide. And then it'll be total access for an hour, and then there's like a nighttime version of everything.
Well, that's because you've got East Coast teams practicing at East Coast hours, you've got West Coast teams at West Coast hours, you've got the Dallas Cowboys who do their take part their training camp in Oxnard, California. So, you know, you've got 9 hours worth of training camps to cover.
It makes sense. I'm just mainly thinking that like they should just call it one big 9 hour show called Training Camp.
Yes, you got a good point there. But yeah, I mean, there's ample time for training camp coverage. You know, the Cleveland Browns, for example, they're one of the teams that practice earlier in the morning. You got like teams like the Pittsburgh Steelers who practice in the middle of the afternoon. The Patriots do a lot of mid-afternoon practices, and then you can move out west and see what the Cardinals and the Cowboys and everybody are up to. So, I understand why there's 9 hours of coverage. It gets really intense.
It's insane.
It's a lot. But it also means that we're one step closer to the National Football League's 2015 season kicking off on September 10th, which means we're just under a month away from the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New England Patriots kicking off festivities on that Thursday night. Pittsburgh Steelers also kick off the preseason schedule this Sunday at the Hall of Fame game at Fawcett Stadium in
Canton. It's an actual football contest.
It's an actual NFL-styled football contest. You've got
60 minutes and everything.
Yeah, 60 minutes and everything. Minnesota Vikings are playing the home team and hosting the Steelers in Sunday's game. Of course, we're not going to see a lot of the starters. You play the Hall of Fame game, you end up playing 5 preseason games instead of 4, so you're going to be resting a lot of your key guys for 99.9% of the playing time on Sunday. But that means a better look at the bottom half of each team's 90-man roster, so that should be fun. If you maybe you're a draft nick or you just like to, you know, see who might break out, guys, you know, just see some random guys. Or maybe you're a football junkie and you kind of know who a lot of these guys are. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, I'd say that's kind of where I fall. I tend to, throughout the preseason, play a lot of, oh, yeah, that guy.
I remember that guy. I put that guy in a mock draft to the Bengals. I remember him.
Well, it's I remember, you know, him from that game, that college game 2 years ago.
Right.
Or maybe he got drafted 2 years ago and we forgot all about him. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. So, yeah, that's the fun part of that for me. You get to see a lot of the guys you don't get to see during the year for obvious reasons. But it is – and it's also like, potentially the next wave. You know, maybe there's like a sleeper type that's out there or something that you can identify. That's kind of the fun of watching preseason for me at least.
Plus, it's Al and Chris.
Of course.
And Michelle Tafoya, the best on TV.
Absolutely.
So that's nice to have them back on our TV screens as well. So, yeah, it's going to be great. You know, every team is in training camp now. I think the last teams to report, I think, were on August 2nd, or the last teams to start practicing was on August 2nd. So all camps are underway at this point. There are injuries. We're not going to discuss the injuries just yet because we're still so far out from week one. A lot of these injuries don't seem to yet be that impactful on week one. And a lot of these injuries we don't have a lot of information on yet, so I don't want to pass too many things along. We'll probably get more in-depth on injuries once we get into next week, once we get into preseason games and we're seeing who's actually missing time when we're talking about the second and third weeks of camp. So we'll go into those injury details eventually, but at this point, until things start really affecting what could happen with a team in the regular season, we'll go there.
Yeah.
We'll go there then.
That makes sense.
But we are going to continue on with our divisional preview series here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. This week, we're taking on the NFC West. I was going to say tackling, but I don't want to tackle anybody who plays in that division. We are being joined by SB Nation's Danny Kelly. He covers the entire NFL for SB Nation, as well as the Seattle Seahawks for SB Nation's Field Goals blog. He's going to be joining us in a few minutes. He's going to be helping us break down all the need-to-knows about the NFC West, a division that was
keeping track of the changes.
Keeping track of all the changes, of which there have been many this offseason. And, you know, see if maybe this division is going to maybe lose some of its shine that it's acquired over
Luster,
the past couple of years as the NFL's top, most difficult division. We'll see if maybe things are going to get a little bit easier for NFC West opponents. Spoiler alert, they're probably not. So we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and we'll be right back with Danny Kelly from SB Nation and the NFC West. Stay tuned.
All right.
We continue on our divisional previews here this week at the F-Ball NFL Podcast with the NFC West. And who better than to join us to discuss this quite entertaining and interesting and complex division is Danny Kelly from SB Nation. Covers the NFL for SB Nation and the Seahawks for their Field Goals blog. How are you doing this evening, Danny?
Welcome.
Thanks. I'm doing really well. And, I just can't wait for this season to get going. We're nearly there. The long summer is almost over.
Exactly. Everybody's in camp now. Everybody's practicing slowly. Everybody's putting the pads on.
Yep.
It's almost time.
Can't come too soon.
No. Okay, so we want to talk, of course, about the NFC West, one of the more interesting divisions in the league, especially based on a lot of the off-season happenings here. Since you're the guest, you get to pick. Do we start at the top with Seattle, or do we start at the bottom with St. Louis?
Let's start elsewhere, I suppose. Get those banged out, and then we can talk Seahawks.
Sounds good. So the St. Louis Rams, they went 6-10 last year. They've made the quarterback switch. Now we have Nick Foles there instead of Sam Bradford. Drafted running back Todd Gurley in round one, so we kind of see where they're trying to take this offense. But what I'm really concerned about is the offensive line. It looks like they're going to be starting three new offensive linemen this year, including rookies at guard and tackle. How is that going to affect Nick Foles' first year with the Rams and what they can really get going with Gurley?
Well, I think, you know, there's just so many question marks for really every team in the NFC West outside of Seattle. But in terms of for the Rams, you know, they're doing it. They have a new offensive coordinator, so we don't really know exactly what they're going to try and do, what they're going to try and be.
Right.
You know, the pick of Todd Gurley kind of points to the fact that they want to run the ball. Plus, then they picked about 12 offensive linemen the rest of their draft, and even went and got a guy in the supplemental draft as well. So they obviously want to run the ball. I think that's Jeff Fisher's sort of, you know, his personality, and that's what he wants to do. I don't know anything about Frank Cignetti, but it'll be interesting to see what, you know, his style is and what he kind of wants to do. But obviously, you know, all those things together, you just never really, you don't know what you're going to see from Nick Foles. Is he going to be the guy that was, you know, so good for the Eagles 2 years ago? You know, his numbers kind of fell off last year a little bit and eventually got hurt. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting. Foles is a good player. I actually think he's a pretty good player. You know, it wasn't just the system in Philly. So I think that's going to be, I think he could be a little more consistent for what, you know, the Rams want to do than Sam Bradford was. I think Bradford is, you know, he's a talented guy as well, but they just couldn't keep him on the field. So, I think, you know, the Foles question is huge. Then add in the fact that they got a new coordinator. You don't really know exactly like what they're going to do with it. And so there's just a lot of questions heading into the season there.
Foles at least does have a pretty good supporting cast when you talk about wide receiver. You know, maybe this year they can finally, with this new coordinator, get Tavon Austin even more involved in that offense. Stedman Bailey, Kenny Britt, of course. But everybody seems to be really excited about Brian Quick in particular in that receiving core.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, it depends on what kind of offense they're going to try and run. But I think going forward this year, they're probably going to have a much more clear plan what they want to do with Tavon Austin. Obviously, they paid a pretty big price to get him. And then last, you know, year, they didn't really come up with they didn't really have a very defined plan on how to use him. They were like trying to run him up through the center, you know, through the guards. And they just did some interesting things with him. So, but in terms of with Brian Quick, he looked like a potential breakout last year. You know, he had had a really good year. He could potentially even build on that this year with some consistency from the quarterback. And yeah, so he, you know, he and Kenny Britt have some potential this next year. I think, you know, Britt's one of those guys that looked pretty good at times as well. You know, he's obviously had a lot of talent over the years, but couldn't stay out of trouble. And so, you know, getting him back on pace is definitely something that they're going to try and do. So I think, you know, with this new coordinator, with a sort of a new identity this year, I think, you know, those three guys could be the big beneficiaries. Excuse me.
It seems like right now, you know, most of these question marks with the Rams are on the offensive side of the ball, with bringing in Nick Foles, with a new offensive coordinator, Todd Gurley, what they're going to do with Tavon Austin, the offensive line. The defensive side of the ball, meanwhile, seems to be pretty stable. Not a lot of changes in particular, not a lot of major changes over the course of the offseason. This is a team that had 40 total sacks last year, basically the same kind of group together. Do you expect another level of improvement out of this defense coming into 2015?
Yeah, I think you could expect that. I think, you know, as some of their young players get older and get more experience in the NFL, I think you can expect that they'll get a little bit better. This is a very, very strong up front seven, obviously,
yeah.
With, you know, Nick Fairley even in the addition. Nick Fairley looked really good at times, you know, last year. He wasn't a high snap guy, but he made the most of his snaps, and there was times where he was pretty dominant as a pass rusher for Detroit. And so, you know, just adding in him next to, you know, potentially Aaron Donald, Robert Quinn, Chris Long, I mean, that's freakishly scary. I'm, you know, in terms of the offensive lines in the NFC West, it's going to be really interesting to see.
Yeah.
This, you know, how many.
Yeah, they were already so good, and then they add him in the mix. And I when I heard that him going there, and it was just, it's like, white man, look out. That's going to be something.
Yeah, how many defensive linemen can you stick on a field at once?
Right. And that was like, everyone was like, what the hell? Like, they already have, like, the deepest, like, offensive or defensive line probably in the NFL. And then, you know, adding in a guy like that into their nickel pass rush is huge. And, you know, I think Robert Quinn could have another huge year. His numbers were down a little bit last year, but, you know, he's still an uber-talented guy. Aaron Donald kind of emerged as a potential, you know, not J.J. Watt type player, but he's so, so disruptive.
Yeah.
On the inside. And so their defensive line is scary, frankly. But, yeah, I mean, if you see guys like T.J. McDonald, Alec Ogletree, Tremaine Johnson, some of their younger players, Janoris Jenkins even, if you see those guys kind of take another step forward in their development, then this defense could be really, really strong.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't envy all of the offensive lines that have to go up against the Rams this year. they're playing a lot of tough teams, I will say that. I mean, there's a tough schedule ahead for all of these NFC West teams, and some good offenses that the Rams will be facing. So I'll be curious to see exactly what kind of a leap that front seven in particular can make this year, because they could really mess up some teams' offenses if they're not careful with their game planning.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm worried about opposing quarterbacks. Like, this is the type of team that literally could, you know, potentially hurt several quarterbacks over the course of the season, just because they're so strong on the front seven, especially in their pass rush. And, you know, that was kind of the thing, like, last couple of years with playing the Rams for the Seahawks is, you know, Russell Wilson was just getting hammered. And, you know, that's something that the teams that the Rams face this year, you know, even outside of the NFC West, are going to have to game plan for, you know, trying to figure out how they can protect their quarterback if, you know, their offensive line isn't that strong. Are they going to try and use some bootlegs, you know, try and just rely on their run game, things like that, quick game? Those are the kind of things you're going to have to deal with against the Rams, just because Aaron Donald's mostly unblockable. Robert Quinn, same deal. And, you know, Chris Long, he's getting older, but he's still a really good player. And so, yeah, that's going to be the major concern for the Rams. That's their identity.
Moving on to the 8-8 San Francisco 49ers. Now, the Philadelphia Eagles have done a lot of offseason moves this year, but I don't think any team has experienced as many changes as the 49ers have in just the course of one offseason. Obviously, Jim Harbaugh, no longer head coach. No Vic Fangio, no Greg Roman. It's Jim Tom Sula at head coach. Very amusing guy to watch in a press conference format, but I'm not sure exactly how suited he particularly is to a head coaching job in the NFL. Frank Gore, running back Frank Gore, he's gone. He's with the Colts. Michael Crabtree's with the Raiders. Patrick Willis, Justin Smith, Chris Borland, and Anthony Davis all retired.
Jeez.
They lost a lot of guys. I mean, they made some additions. They brought in Torrey Smith, former Baltimore Raven receiver. They have a lot of optimism in running back Carlos Hyde this year. Mm-hmm. They added Darnell Dockett. They drafted Arik Armstead on the defensive side of the ball. And they're expecting a healthy Navarro Bowman back. But when you look at all the subtractions from leadership on down, it just seems like it's going to be a hard mountain for the San Francisco 49ers to climb up this year, or maybe a deep hole for them to try to pull themselves out of, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's in the NFL, every team walks such a fine line in terms of maintaining that mental edge, you know, because things can snowball really easily in the NFL. It's crazy how that can happen. I think that happened a lot last year. You know, this was still a talented team, but the bad things started happening, sort of off the field stuff. You know, there was the Jim Harbaugh rumors all year. There was just a lot of stuff going on in that organization. You know, there was a lot of tension between the ownership and the coaching staff, and I think that just trickled down. This year, there's just so many questions that I feel, you know, anything could happen, really. I really don't know what to expect from the 49ers in terms of, are they going to be like 4-12, or are they going to potentially be 12-4? I think there's really a whole range you could expect from this team. And so I would say they still have a lot of talent on defense. You know, they've lost two of their best players, probably two of the best players in the NFL, really, in Willis and Justin Smith. And so that's going to be enormous to try and fill those shoes. But at the end of the day, you just don't know how players are going to, I guess, react to what happens during the season, how Jim Tuimsula is going to be able to hold that all together. I think there's a lot of questions of what are they going to be on offense? What are they going to be on defense? There's all new coordinators, all new coaching staff. You know, you don't really know what to expect from Colin Kaepernick. He hasn't exactly been a rock of, you know, consistency.
Right.
So there's just so many questions. And obviously the offensive line had some changes this year. You know, the reports out of 49er camp right now is that Torrey Smith looks great. And so that's definitely going to be potentially an upgrade over Michael Crabtree, we'll see. But I just think, like the Rams, there's just so many questions right now that you have to answer that it's really, really hard to make a prediction as what you're going to see out there. I tend to remain relatively bullish on the Niners because anytime, you know, they've looked like they're out of it in the past, like 5 years, they've kind of bounced back really strong. And so I'm not exactly expecting them to sort of, you know, go into the tank. But at the same time, there's just, you know, there's a lot of factors at play right now, and they have to overcome a lot of those things.
Yeah, one of the things that really concerns me is that there's been a lot of changes on the offensive line. They're trying to figure out, of course, the right tackle position now that Anthony Davis retired. They're trying to figure out the left guard position, the right guard position. And then you have a quarterback in Colin Kaepernick who took 52 sacks last year. And he doesn't have the help of Frank Gore. You know, they're very optimistic. They're very excited about Carlos Hyde. But even if Carlos Hyde is a good running back, there's a difference between a good running back and what Frank Gore has provided this team for so many years. So I feel like, you know, and then you have add into the mix a new head coach, a new offensive coordinator, and it just seems like there's a potential for disaster here when it comes to this offense, just because you got a new look offensive line. You've got Kaepernick, who has been sacked a lot, even though he's so mobile, he still is you know, he's not evading all of these sacks clearly, and you don't have Gore, and so that's what really concerns me, because I don't know if Kaepernick is going to be in a situation to have time to, like, throw these deep passes to Torrey Smith, which is what Smith really does the best.
Right.
So I don't even know how useful a guy like him can be. So that's where I'm really mostly concerned, is where does it go with the offensive line to the run game to Kaepernick?
Yeah, you know, and there's talk of them changing to more of a zone scheme this year in terms of up front, rather than the typical 49er Stanford power O that they've been running in the last couple of years. And so there's that question as well. It's like, they're changing literally almost everything.
Yeah.
And so, are they gonna, you know, try and have that explosive deep passing game with Torrey Smith? You know, that's kind of, I guess, the idea. You know, obviously Colin Kaepernick has a really, really strong arm, so he can hit those deep passes, but you got to give him enough time to set up up front. So, That's going to be a big thing. I expect they'll probably do a lot of bootlegging, especially if they do more zone blocking. So, you know, kind of have that game going on to give him a little bit of time to bootleg out, and then he can throw on the run. That's kind of, you know, he's pretty good at that anyway. And so I'll expect maybe a little bit more of that this year. So perhaps maybe they'll have him under center a little bit more. You know, last year I feel like they were probably out of the shotgun and pistol a lot more than taking snaps under center. So that could be something that they do a little bit differently. Again, it's just how balanced are they going to be? Are they going to try and be a passing team? Are they going to try and be really balanced again? I imagine they'll probably try and be very balanced. But, like you said, with a second year relatively unproven running back as the main guy, and then Reggie Bush is kind of, you know, he's more of, like, I think he's probably going to be utilized a little bit more in the passing game.
Right.
So, yeah, there's just a lot of questions to answer there. And
Reggie Bush was out there.
Yeah, Reggie Bush is out there.
So that'll be interesting. And then, you know, I guess they just have to figure out their identity and figure out what they're going to be. And Colin Kaepernick has to prove that he can't, you know, that he can go through the year without getting rattled. I'm a little bit, you know, because Jim Harbaugh, you know, he's kind of a QB guru type of guy. He was a college quarterback, NFL quarterback, I should say. And obviously he, you know, coached Andrew Luck in college. And so he knows his quarterbacking. And you saw, like, on the sidelines before games, you know, Harbaugh and Kaepernick seemed to have a very strong relationship. And whenever times would get really, really tense, you'd see them kind of like talking, and he'd be pumping him up and hitting his pads and doing that whole, you know, that was kind of like their routine. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens forward here. You know, obviously Jeep Chris, he's been the quarterback's coach for the Niners. And so in theory, that will be a relatively seamless transition. But there's still that element of, you know, that's just kind of my impression of Colin Kaepernick, because he can be very, very, very good at times, but then at other times he can kind of let things get into his head, and you can see he gets a little bit frenetic. And so that is, to me, you know, those are the main offensive questions, is and they're major ones. It's like, what's their identity going to be? How's Colin Kaepernick going to be? And then, you know, obviously, like, what are they just overall, like, what are they going to be on offense?
The defense, too, you know, you did mention that there are still some stud names on that defense, and that's true, and they're getting Navarro Bowman back. They added Darnell Dockett. They drafted Arik Armstead. But, I mean, they lost a lot of guys. You know, Patrick Willis, Justin Smith, and Chris Borland to retirement. They lost two cornerbacks in Parrish Cox and Chris Culliver in free agency. Outside linebacker Dan Scuda went to Jacksonville. So, I mean, that's a lot of guys who are contributing a lot of snaps on defense, who now they have to find replacements for, whether their own depth, whether, you know, they have some rookies step up. So that's going to be a huge question for them as well.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what happens to your defense when you take out two potential future Hall of Fame players?
Right. Usually not good things.
Right, exactly. Like, I mean, you know, the Niner fans and analysts around the Bay Area probably will say, you know, some of these replacements are going to be darn good players too. But it's at the same time, it's these guys have been playing in the system for, you know, 5-10 years, and very consistent, high, you know, all pro caliber performers in that system. And so, you know, in terms of getting Darnell Dockett in, I think he's a good player. I think he's a really good player. But he's a little older. He's coming off of injuries. He's no Justin Smith. And so, you know, that's, you know, he's basically, I think, going in to take that spot and combine him with, you know, Arik Armstead and some of these other guys, Ian Williams, potentially Tony Gerard, Eddie. And so, you know, that they just have, I feel like a broken record, but they have so many questions. And so, yeah, that's big. And then on the back end, you know, it's not only it's essentially they lost a huge guy up front, they lost a huge guy in the middle, and they lost two players in the back end. And so it's all over the field, really, that they have to, like, you know, replace guys at. And so losing their two starting cornerbacks is huge. You know, they signed Sharice Wright, and that's, I think that was a good sign. And Dante Johnson's coming up. He could potentially start. Tremaine Brock is probably going to take over at cornerback, but, you know, they re-signed Chris Cook, and then people were kind of excited about that, and then just actually cut him last week or earlier this week. And so, yeah, I guess they feel strongly about their upcoming guys, in order to cut Cook, and so I guess they feel good about that. But I just, again, there's just so many snaps that they have to replace on defense, essentially. Yeah. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do. And, you know, obviously also they're switching up to a different coordinator on defense as well. And so you have to answer the question, what's their identity going to be? I imagine it'll be pretty much the same, but, you know, when you have a different guy come in and take over the defense, you can expect it to look a little different.
Moving on to the Arizona Cardinals, who finished out the 2014 season at 11-5. So the Arizona Cardinals, as compared to the St. Louis Rams and the San Francisco 49ers, have a lot fewer question marks, especially when you're talking about the offensive line. In fact, it looks like maybe their kind of long-standing offensive line issues might be somewhat solved as long as everyone, of course, stays healthy. They drafted tackle DJ Humphries. They added Mike Iupati from the 49ers. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Cooper is healthy. So they've got guys who are healthy and available on that line. But, you know, you've got the line. Last year, this team went 11-5, had a lot of issues at quarterback once Carson Palmer got hurt. He's returning from the ACL. This is his second ACL tear in his career. You think, I mean, he's kind of like the comeback kid. Is he going to come back again this year?
Yeah, and I actually really like Carson Palmer. He's just one of those guys that anytime you think he's dead, he's like, this guy won't die.
Nope.
But, yeah, so and he was actually playing really well before he went down last year with his ACL.
Yeah.
You know, I think he really likes the Arians offense. You know, it's kind of wide open. He's a little bit of a gunslinger type of quarterback, and so I think it kind of fits his personality, his style. And, you know, so the Cardinals are a really interesting team just because they managed to win 11 games last year, essentially with playing with some crappy quarterback, like I think more than half the season. And so,
yeah,
they're a really interesting team. You know, obviously they had a few losses on defense. Obviously, Dockett went over to the 49ers.
Right.
But, you know, at the end of the day, and then they also lost cornerback Cromartie. But I still think their defense is going to be really good. You know, their front seven's really strong. Calais Campbell's really good. They got a couple of free agents in Corey Redding and Corey Peters that'll be, you know, solid guys for them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and obviously in their defensive backfield, getting Tyrann Mathieu back is going to be a big deal because everything we've heard so far in camp is that he's just flying all over the place and he's kind of that X-factor guy. And, you know, their other safeties are really good, too. Deone Buchanan had a good rookie season. Tony Jefferson's good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they like what they saw last year from Jerod Powers. And so, you know, potentially he could take over for Cromartie on the outside. And, you know, hopefully, in theory, not skip too much of a beat there. But the big question for them is what are they going to what's their defense going to look like with a new coordinator? You know, obviously, Todd Bowles, highly, highly respected guy. Went over to the Jets and he's their head coach now. And so I imagine they'll probably try and do something very similar to what Bowles did last year. But again, it's you know, you're losing the guy who's calling plays. You're losing the coordinator who basically, you know, on a wing and a prayer held the team together for, you know, these games where they had no quarterback. And so, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see kind of how that changes and if they're still the attacking, crazy, blitzing, you know, taking huge chances type of defense this year. And if that works for them, you know, still, or if they kind of try and change things up. And so, yeah, that's going to be the interesting thing on defense.
The other thing that kind of interests me with defense is if you look at the additions they've made this offseason, and I was looking at some data, something that Pro Football Focus put out a little while ago about just percentage of pass rushes that were blitzes, and the Cardinals were blitzing more than any other defense in the league, and basically what Pro Football Focus boiled it down to was that they just didn't have a lot of natural pass rushers by the time that the season wore on and there were injuries. And so it looks like they've spent a lot of effort during this offseason to have some natural pass rushers in that front seven and not have to rely so much on blitzing in order to create pressure.
Yeah, I think that was kind of their thing. They were steaming pressure, you know, by basically throwing everything in the kitchen sink at you. They got, they drafted Marcus Golden. He could be an interesting player for them. And I always liked Kareem Martin. You know, Shaq Riddick is another rookie they drafted. I think he got hurt recently, but they've got a lot of really good athletes on defense. And they went out and got, Sean Witherspoon from Atlanta. I'm just looking at their roster here. They have some interesting players that they could definitely, I think, you know, go away a little bit from the really hardcore blitzing. But in my mind, I think they'll probably kind of keep that up. I just feel like Arians is kind of like, that's his style.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, he's kind of just one of those guys, like, I think he just wants to, like, make you crazy and so throw everything at you that he can. I think that'll kind of live through their new defensive coordinator, who I've actually never even heard of, James Betcher?
Yeah, was he a in-house promotion?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, so, I mean, obviously, since I don't even know how to say his name, I don't know what his style is, but... But yeah, that'll be just that to me is the big question to answer on for Arizona. I think their offense is going to continue to be good. Their passing game is going to be good. The run game is the big question on offense. They were like worst run game in the league last year, which I know I'm almost sure that Arians, like, that probably pissed him off. So you know, their offensive lines should be considerably better this year.
Yes.
And so, yeah, that to me, you know, the big thing on offense, their passing game is going to be good. I think they're, you know, especially if the quarterback can stay healthy, then obviously they're going to be a lot stronger on offense. But the question is, are they going to be one dimensional again? Because their run game was bad. Like,
yes. Oh, it barely made a dent last year. It's kind of unbelievable how far this team went being a one-dimensional passing offense that lost its starting quarterback and eventually would start at three or four different guys under center.
It was really remarkable. They were just one of those teams, and you know, I don't want to disrespect them, but like it was like they captured magic in a bottle almost last year, and I wondered, like, you know, if they have similar injury issues this year, if they could really do it again, if the defense is that strong, or if it's just kind of like, you know, they were just a team that captured lightning in a bottle, managed to win some big games, and I don't know, because I think they had, like, I can't quote it off the top of my head, but I want to say they had a whole bunch of comeback wins last year, maybe more than any team in the NFL, and so they were just kind of one of those teams that figured out how to win some games.
Well, they also just have such a great coach. I mean, you see all these guys, like, to a man, I'm sure they all absolutely love, you know, playing for Bruce Arians, and I think that can do a lot in terms of helping morale when the situation seems so untenable. You lose your quarterback, you don't have a run game, and you can at least he helps you draw from that, from the well, in, you know, the internal well, if you will, in order to at least not say, okay, now we're screwed, this is over, we're done. and so I think that has a lot to do with it, is that, you know, this team is really reflective of their head coach.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And that was kind of what I was saying about the whole blitzing thing, too, is, like, he's just, like, you know, he throws caution to the wind.
Yeah.
He's just kind of, like, one of those guys that people want to rally around. And, you know, so, yeah, I definitely would agree with that. He's kind of their charismatic CEO kind of guy that people think, you know, if this guy knows what he's doing, we just got to follow him and do what he says, and we'll be okay.
And he seems cool, you know. Yeah, he just seems cool.
He seems cool.
He wears cool hats.
Yeah, the tangle and the glasses. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think he's a player's coach from what I've heard. And,
back when he was OC for the Steelers, you know, guys loved him. Ben Roethlisberger loved him. Ben Roethlisberger was so miserable at first when like they didn't promote him and to head coach, and instead eventually brought in Todd Haley and all of that. He wasn't very happy about all that. So, but it's working better now for Ben, but players love him. He is definitely a player's coach.
Yeah. And he's produced pretty much everywhere he's gone. So, you know, I think that his people respect him, and he's kind of got that, cachet, you know, of being successful everywhere he's gone, essentially. And so, so I think he's kind of their rallying point. He's their charismatic leader. And that was a big part of last year. I think he's, you know, he kind of, like you said, he stepped people away from the edge and kept everyone going. And when they lost Palmer early on and managed to keep everything going.
Yep.
Yeah.
And last but certainly not least, we've got the 12-4 Seattle Seahawks. Of course, two straight Super Bowl appearances, didn't win the second one. We all know why. the Seahawks took care of some important offseason business right before training camp, getting Russell Wilson locked down to a 4-year deal. Also got Bruce Irvin paid. They signed Jimmy Graham. They traded their center Max Unger as part of the package to New Orleans to get tight end Jimmy Graham. You know, things right now look pretty good for Seattle because, you know, the time of reckoning is coming. We've been talking about this since the first Super Bowl, where there's going to be a point where a lot of these inexpensive guys that they have on that roster, our paydays are going to be coming due, and there's just not enough salary cap space to accommodate it. So, you know, are you feeling like this might be the last time where the Super Bowl window is again as wide open as it's been the past 2 years, because they can, this is maybe the last time they can really keep the whole band together?
I think, you know, if you look at the way that they've done their contract structures and put together their cap, they're pretty much set for the next 3 years. And that's kind of their window as far as I see it. They have a core group of guys locked up through those 3 years in terms of, you go down the line, Russell Wilson, Jimmy Graham, Marshawn Lynch, he's under club control. You never know when he's going to retire, but he's under club control. Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, Bobby Wagner, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, and Cam Chancellor. Those players are all under contract through 2017. And so that's kind of their core. But in terms of, you know, I think they're with the rising salary cap, you don't really know like how much it's going to rise. So I think that's kind of, you just kind of have to look at it. Like, I think for the next 2 years, they're okay. And then going further past that, I think, you know, you have to start to wonder, you know, you have to kind of start hitting on some guys in the draft. You have to really kind of get lucky there. They're not going to be able to go out into free agency and get guys like Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill, when they're paying their quarterback, you know, 400, 500 grand a year. So yeah, they have to hit on some guys in the draft. They have to get lucky probably with some guys, and in order to maintain the sort of like what John Schneider calls the championship caliber team. And so, yeah, I mean, the honeymoon with Russell Wilson in terms of having him for 500 grand a year is over. They can't go out and get like a big time free agent when they're paying their quarterback. You know, next year I think the cap will be somewhere like 11 or. It's double digits anyway. I can't remember off the top of my head. So, that hurts your ability to go out and sign free agents and keep some of your core guys. But in terms of the way they've done it, I think, you know, they've done it just about as well as you can. The Percy Harvin thing kind of threw things out of whack. It didn't work out. They ended up losing Golden Tate probably because of that. And so, you know, if in a perfect world, I'd much rather have Golden Tate on that team right now. But, the fact that they realized their mistake quickly, traded him, kind of just cut bait on that, that allowed them to go get Jimmy Graham. So Graham's under contract already, so they didn't have to, like, redo his contract. And he's actually making, I want to say it's like 9 or 10, and which is a really pretty reasonable thing for the kind of player he is. You know, he kind of lost on the whole receiver versus tight end deal. And so he's being paid like a high-end tight end, and he's essentially just like, you know, he's going to be more of a tight end in the Seattle system, but he's essentially just a big receiver. So overall, I think, you know, they've done as well as they can in terms of keeping their core together. The one guy I think they lost was Golden Tate, but they obviously Byron Maxwell this last year they couldn't pay him just because he got paid crazy amounts to go play in Philly, and they just couldn't match it. But overall, I'd say they've done a pretty good job considering, and it's a good problem to have, obviously.
Sure.
So moving forward, the next 2 years, I think they look good. And then from there, it's just anybody's guess.
One thing that really concerned me in the off season is, you know, after the Super Bowl, pretty much every member of that Seattle secondary was injured in one way or the other, and it was kind of like, well, are these guys going to be ready in time for camp? Are they going to be ready in time for week one? Are all of them going to be ready? And it looks like everybody's becoming ready. Earl Thomas, the safety, just came off the physically unable to perform list this week, but then you've got Cam Chancellor holding out. So is he really going to miss a ton of training camp? Not saying that he needs training camp in order to be ready for this season, but do you really think that this holdout is going to get him paid at any point this summer?
Nothing significant, probably, would be my guess. I think they might give him a small concession, kind of like they gave to Marshawn Lynch, in terms of potentially moving a little bit of guaranteed money around and maybe giving him a small bonus or something like that. But, they're very much not in the idea that they want to start setting that precedent, because then they've got, Michael Bennett, they've got so many of these guys that are going to come to John Schneider's door and ask essentially the same thing. Like, why am I not getting a raise? Why do I have to play out my contract till its final season? So, I just don't think I think it's too dangerous for them to really bend too much to Cam Chancellor in this case. Not that they don't want to, because I think they love Chancellor. He's a team leader. He's been a really good player for them. Obviously, he's a big part of their defense. He's kind of the heart and soul kind of guy. He's really Marshawn Lynch of the defense. And so, I think they would love to give him a raise, but at this point they just can't because of the future implications that would create. And so, as much as they may want to give him, to reward him for what he's done, I don't think they can. I don't think they will. But right. I think he won't miss any games. He's not going to miss games.
Yeah, so Andrea was mentioning earlier that in the trade to get Jimmy Graham, they gave up their center, Max Unger. Mm-hmm. So what's going on with the replacement plan there?
Yeah, so right now it's basically come down to a couple of players. Right now it's looking like Lemuel Jean-Pierre is the favorite. They've got another guy named Drew Nowak, who is kind of like a waiver wire pickup over the years. He's been like a practice squad guy, and he's apparently looked pretty good in camp. But my guess is it's going to end up being Lemuel Jean-Pierre. He's actually started quite a few games over the years for the Seahawks as sort of like a core backup. He's played at guard and center, so he's got experience in the system. He's not a real strong player, but he's basically a solid, replacement level player, I would say. And so, he's not Max Unger, but I think the way they saw it is Unger was having trouble staying healthy. His body was kind of giving up on him. And the ability to go get a guy like Jimmy Graham, who's had, more touchdowns than anybody except Marshawn Lynch and Dez Bryant over the last 4 or 5 years, I think they just saw it as that was definitely worth it in their offense. And so right now the offensive line is pretty much their biggest question, I would say. And, we don't really know who's going to be the left guard starter or the center starter, but their options both have started in this system and they've been around for a while. So I don't think people are, too scared at this point.
Right.
So the thing with the Seattle passing offense is that it's been a bunch of no-name guys, or typically no-name, kind of no-name seeming guys that Wilson's been throwing to, Doug Baldwin, Jermaine Kearse. But now you've got Jimmy Graham in the mix, and now everybody's very excited about the rookie Tyler Lockett. So what do you think Lockett's role is going to be when you have Graham, Baldwin, and Kearse out there as well?
Well, I think the big thing, and the Seahawks like to kind of move their guys around. Baldwin's been a bit of a slot guy. I think you could have more four wide receiver sets, or I should say three receiver sets with Jimmy Graham out there as well. But the thing that Lockett's going to bring that I think the Seahawks offense has been missing a little bit is just the ability to get open on his own. You don't have to scheme a guy open. You don't have to throw it up and hope for, a 50-50 catch on the sideline. You don't have to set a pick or do any of these things. He can just run a route and get open. And that's pretty much what people have been excited about. Like, there's been some gifts coming out of training camp of just like destroying people. And so that's kind of what he was known for in college. I think he was like K-State's only weapon, really. And he like still dominated, even though teams were game planning to stop him. And
for a couple years too, I think.
Yeah. And so, he's a really good player. He's polished in terms of, his route running and kind of just his maturity. Like when you hear him talk, it's like, this guy doesn't sound like a rookie. And so obviously he's going to have to prove himself, but right now it's looking like, he could potentially be a pretty good, pretty big deal. And for the Seahawks offense, especially just on like third downs, Russell Wilson wasn't super strong on third down last year. And so having another guy that can kind of just get open for him is going to be big. I think Doug Baldwin can definitely, he's a very strong route runner and can get open, but past him, the Seahawks didn't really have guys that would win one-on-one. So that's going to be big, obviously, having the defense pretty much concentrating on Jimmy Graham and Marshawn Lynch, that doesn't hurt either. You know, you can't really scheme against every player on the Seahawks, and so Tyler Lockett could find himself, you know, a lot of single coverage, a lot of opportunities to kind of just, like, beat his guy and get open. So people are pretty excited about that and you know, the prospect of being able to burn players just on your own route running.
One guy on offense I'm definitely not worried about this year is Marshawn Lynch. I mean, everybody can harp on, you know, running backs get older, running backs have X amount of carries, they break down. But there are just some guys who kind of defy that. Frank Gore has been one for quite a few years. Everybody's kind of looking at Adrian Peterson and expecting, you know, not a big slowdown from him. And obviously, you know, Marshawn Lynch's career is basically in his hands. I mean, he's going to walk away whenever he decides to. You expect more from the same out of Marshawn Lynch this year? I mean, I do, because I have no reason not to.
Yeah, I do. I think for several reasons, Marshawn Lynch and his situation are special. First of all, just as a player, he's a special player in terms of his combination of agility and power. I think you don't really find that very often. He's not like a speed-based guy.
Right.
You know, so he's not. It's not like he's... As he starts to lose a little bit of his speed, he's going to, like, tank in terms of stats. So he's more of, like, he's a very smart player. He has this otherworldly weird ability to – he, like, packs more mass than most human beings or whatever.
Yeah, he's very dense.
Yeah, there was, like, this joke because he – when he was in utero, he absorbed, like, the placenta or whatever of his twin brother. Or I don't know exactly what happened, but talk about it. So he's essentially – two human beings, you know, he's superpowers. But honestly, when you see guys bounce off of him when he's running, it's like, seriously, what is he made out of, lead? Like, it's really weird. But so first of all, you know, I just think he's a special player. You know, it's hard to compare him to just like a standard running back in terms of when he's going to fall off. And in addition to that, I think the system that the Seahawks play is really advantageous to him extending his career a little bit, just because with the read option and with going forward with Jimmy Graham, it's going to be really pick your poison with the Seahawks offense in terms of Lynch's last year, you know, kind of went away from the normal thing that the Seahawks would see a lot of eight-man boxes. With the read option, that kind of stopped happening because you have to commit at least one player to Russell Wilson, sometimes two. And so Lynch was getting a lot of light boxes in terms of you know, just where he's running, the defense can't commit that many guys to stopping him, because then, you know, Russell Wilson's running all over you. Russell Wilson had 850 something yards last year rushing. So then add in Jimmy Graham and you have the potential of, you know, you're probably going to want to put at least one safety over the top of Graham. You know, they're going to tilt a little bit of coverage towards Graham in terms of, you know, he's just a guy you have to watch out for. And so that could be another thing that alleviates defenses really focusing too much on Lynch, and I think that could kind of help his game this year. So for those three reasons, I'm kind of expecting him to just continue, you know, plugging along and not necessarily have a bigger year, but I don't expect him to really, you know, go off that proverbial cliff.
Well, we really appreciate you joining us here on the F-Ball NFL podcast this week, Danny. Before we let you go, let our listeners know where they can find you all around the wonderful internets.
Yeah, you can find me at Field Goals on Twitter and fieldgoals.com for the Seahawks stuff. And then obviously SBNation.com for my NFL-wide coverage.
And where can they find you on Twitter? Did we already say that? Did I miss that?
Yeah, at Field Goals.
F-I-E-L-D.
He snuck it in there.
He snuck it in there. All right.
Field Goals, as in the bird.
As in the bird, not the three-point play.
Yes. It's a very funny pun.
Yes. Very actually, clever.
It predates me, so I can't take credit or blame for it.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. It was definitely an illuminating look at what is going to be a very interesting division this year, especially given how many changes especially have undergone the Rams and the 49ers in particular, all those changes.
Yeah, it's going to be very fascinating. Like I said, this season can't come in quick enough, but it's especially exciting for me just because of all the changes in the NFC West. It's going to be some fascinating things to learn in the first couple of weeks.
Lots of known knowns and a lot of known unknowns.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate you having you, us having you on here this evening. So yes. We're almost there. It's almost football season. We've got preseason on Sunday. So I think we're going to make it.
Yeah. We're in the home stretch. And thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. Have a wonderful night.
All right, you guys too.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Again to SB Nation's Danny Kelly for joining us this week at the F-Ball NFL podcast to help us with our NFC West divisional preview.
Yes.
I have a feeling that we'll be having him back on sometime this season because there's a lot to talk about, particularly in that division, and there's going to be a lot to talk about in the NFL as well. So something tells me Mr. Kelly's going to be making another appearance here at some point.
Oh, I think that's a good idea. Check in on him and when it's in the middle of the madness and we kind of have at least some partial answers to a lot of the questions that we just
yes.
went through.
Yeah, we'll have some idea about the Niners offense, the Niners defense, these offensive line issues that almost all four teams in that division have. So we'll be able to maybe reassess.
I think that's a good idea.
Later on in the season. So again, big thank you to Danny Kelly. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Field Goals, F-I-E-L-D. I don't know how to spell field. F-I-E-L-D-Z-U-L-L-S.
You're a writer, right? Isn't that what you're saying?
I'm better at writing things like typing or writing them out by hand than I am spelling words out loud. I'm no spelling bee champ. I would be one of those kids that are like writing the word on their hand
before you say
letter
it,
by
yeah.
letter before you say it. Yeah, that's me. That's me. I'm a writer. I'm not a spelling talker.
Or you're not a oratory speller.
I'm not a spelly talker.
Spelly talker. Yeah.
So yeah, make sure you follow Danny Kelly on Twitter.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
It was good stuff. It always is good stuff. We know how to pick the guests on the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that wraps up our show for this week. I am Andrea Hengst. I cover the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns for BleacherReport.com. Cover the Cleveland Browns and a little bit of AFC North for CLE, that's cle.scout.com, a.k.a. the Orange and Brown Report, the Browns arm of scout.com. And I cover the entire National Football League for Sports on Earth and thesportsdaily.com. So be sure to check out my columns there as well. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at fball_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea.
And I'm Brian, and I cover the soundboard for this podcast.
And you're a spell talkie.
I'm a speller talkie person.
Yeah.
Am I?
I don't know.
I don't know. And I'm also on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
So again, a big thanks to Danny Kelly, and a big thanks to all of you out there listening to our wonderful little show, whether this is your first time or you're a regular weekly diehard listener. We appreciate each and every one of you. We will be back next week. We'll continue our divisional previews, talk about any news and must-knows, if you will, around the NFL, and maybe even talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame game, depending on how compelling of a matchup the Steelers and Vikings decide to make.
We're going to have to talk about that, I'm sure.
I'm sure there'll be something to talk about. So we'll be back, of course, next week, so don't miss it here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. Until then, enjoy 9 hours a day of training camp coverage. Enjoy the Hall of Fame induction ceremony on Saturday. And, of course, enjoy the return of NFL football on Sunday night in the Hall of Fame.
Later.
Peace.